What is up, Mets fans? Welcome back to another episode of the Mets Up Podcast. A little player preview action, stroking that podcast algorithm, as we're going to be saying for every episode. I don't know. Me using the word stroking also feels inappropriate, but in a way that I like. So, Pete Alonso episode. You guys know he's good. You know he's great. Got a lot to talk about with him, mostly on the contract side. And James, I know you've done a little bit of deep diving into some first base comparisons as to what a Pete Alonso contract could look like. What do you got for us?
I mean, it's just kind of that the vibe right now around Pete, the contract itself has been brutal. You guys heard us talk about it with Tim Healy last week. It's kind of like every beat reporter, every baseball reporter who covers the Mets is almost chained to this question. Pete, what do you think about your contract? Is it going to be an extension before the season? And what do you think it's going to look like next year? It's like, oh, I want to be a Met forever. I think I'm going to be ready to go, but it's unpredictable, but I definitely want to stay as a Met. And that's it. That's all we can think about. That's all we know you guys want to hear about. That's where everybody's head is at. So again, we just wanted to really get through all this free agency stuff and then talk about who Pete's going to be in 2024. Because I think we're going to see an amazing version of Pete Alonso in 2024. Between being injured for most of 2023 while still hitting 46 home runs, everything he's done in his career at this point tells you to believe that he's still going to continue to be a really good hitter. And I just think there's going to be a hunger between this down year last year, the being in the contract year, like it's all going to come together. And like we talked about last week too, like we've been hearing all offseason spring training so far. Seems like a very relaxed vibe right now in Mets camp. People seem happy to be there. People seem loose, content, not content. Content's a bad word. Never content. Athletes are never content.
Never content.
Not content. Never content. But just seems loose. People seem happy to be themselves. I think that's going to be very important this season.
Pete is great. He's going to be great. Like we said, we'll talk about that a little bit later. But let's talk about what this actual contract could look like, because he's hitting free agency and Pete wants to get paid big money. We've heard him talk and Scott Boras talk like he wants to be paid like the best first baseman in Major League Baseball. We talked about this when we started doing episodes again this offseason in January about the trade side more so. But now let's talk about the re-sign side, because I think there is a legitimate possibility that the Mets bring him back. I think they would be the favorites right now when he hits the free agent market to re-sign Pete Alonso. But where do you pay him? Because like the first baseman market is weird, because you have Freddie Freeman, who got paid a lot of money, but it was over a shorter period of time. Matt Olson got that big contract. Is he better than Matt Olson? And then when you look at the first baseman before him, they're definitely like way better, but also baseball was more stupid then. So I don't know how you can really determine what Pete deserves to actually get paid.
No, a lot more stupid. And again, Pete's not even just saying he wants to be paid like one of the highest first basemen in baseball. I think Boras said a quote like it's not even relative to first base. It's just players in baseball. And that's just it's just not really reality for one, Pete, and two, just for first baseman in general. You mentioned Freddie Freeman and Paul Goldschmidt. They've like paced the market kind of historically now for first baseman. They're making $27-26 million annually, respectively, with Freeman making $1 million more. Those are the highest AAVs for any first baseman in the history of baseball. Freeman has an extra year, 6-year deal versus 5-year deal for Goldschmidt. And those total values are 6-162 and 5-130. Each were signed early in the 30s, 31, 32 years old for each guy. And both of those guys, a little different, are very much, I think, legitimately Hall of Famers.
Yes.
They each, I don't think Freeman has an MVP, but I think he has multiple top three, top four finishes. He does
COVID MVP.
COVID, okay, so fake MVP. And then Goldschmidt has a real MVP. They actually got after the contract was signed, but he was in the mix for multiple MVPs always. He's just those two of the best players this generation, and they're awesome. Then you have Matt Olson, who we've talked about also compared to Pete. He has more years than those guys. He signed a younger, 28 years old, but for less money annually, only $21 million annual value, 8-168 contract. And he just had, a 50-130 year where he was one of the most valuable players on baseball. Just the other guy in his team had one of the best seasons in the history of sport, so it didn't really look as obvious. And then besides those guys, there's only one other first baseman in the entire league that's on more than a 3-year contract, and it's Jake Cronenworth. And one, that's a horrible contract. And two, he can play other positions, and he was mostly playing other positions when he signed that deal. They just have acquired better defensive players, more middle infielders, so it's pushed him to first base. So you only have four guys in all of Major League Baseball on more than a 3-year contract at first base. And now you have Pete Alonso, who by all measures is an amazing hitter, amazing power hitter, one of the best in the whole league, but he wants to get paid more than all of them. It's hard for me to rationalize that from this perspective.
Yeah, this is where Scott Boras makes this complicated for us, because Scott Boras is definitely in Pete's head of like, you're going to get paid like the biggest first base, like the best first baseman to ever play. You're going to get the highest AAV ever. And as much as I love Pete, this is the only time I'm ever going to like be a little bit negative on this and a little bit negative on Pete is in terms of the money. He's just simply not better than Freddie Freeman. He's simply not better than Matt Olson right now. So I don't know how he can justify truly, or how a team can truly justify paying him $27, $28, $29, or even $30 million a year. It just doesn't really make sense. Now, I don't think Pete's game is going to slow down anytime soon. I think he's always going to be hitting 35, 45, close to 50 home runs every single season. Doesn't feel like something that's going to change for him anytime soon. He's not old by any means. But the idea of paying all that money to a first baseman is going to be tough, because as much as we love Pete, relative value to other players on the field, first base just doesn't bring in that much. Again, unless you are Freddie Freeman, and unfortunately, he's not.
Totally, but it's also like he's way above the next tier of first baseman too, that have these deals. Like Anthony Rizzo's a 35-year-old on a 2-year deal.
Way better.
Like, he's not even close. Jose Abreu is on a really bad 3-year contract that he looks totally dead on year one, even though he did get a little hot at the end of the year, just for people in really deep fantasy baseball leagues. He's a sneaky guy. Then you have Muncie, Josh Bell, Hoskins on pretty cheap 2-year deals. Like, Pete is obviously much better than all those guys, but he's also definitely a tier below the Olsen and the Freeman. So it's a weird market context for Pete, especially when he has these crazy counting stats that you can't deny. And then Pete's like, home runs, RBIs, like, who's better than me? And in terms of those two things, really nobody's better than Pete.
Nobody.
Nobody has more home runs than Pete Alonso since he came into the league. Almost nobody has more RBIs. And like, both of those, like, he's kind of way ahead of the pack in the home runs thing. Like, it's not even close. But then you have to get back to Boris, because that's where this negotiation goes. And we're seeing the way he's handling his clients this offseason, and it looks like brutal. Like, I'm nervous about the Pete situation in general, but I think I'm still probably in my head like 70-30. He's back as a Met, 70% he comes back, 30% he leaves. And that's just pure gut feeling. There's nothing behind that at all.
We know nothing.
No inside information. We know less than nothing these days.
Yeah, we knew nothing before. We know nothing now.
And then I found a... Found some stuff from the legend Joel Sherman, an article about Pete Alonso wants Toto. There you go. Hitting free agency at the same time. Boris, at the time of this, so this is, we're recording this on March 1st, so he could sign a bigger deal in the next few days because he has all these guys still in the free agent market. But Boris negotiated 26 contracts as an agent worth more than $125 million in total. Out of those 26 contracts, only 3 of them were contract extensions. Do you know who those guys could have been?
No, I'm not ready for that. I have no clue. I wasn't prepared for that question.
All right, well, usually decent at trivia, so I guess Sporkle Mark is dead. You're doing real content again. But 3 total extensions. 2 of them were Jose Altuve.
Oh, wow, okay. I didn't even know Jose Altuve was a Boris guy. I had no clue.
There you go. And the other one was Steven Strasburg, who signed an extension, then went to free agency still. So, weird thing. So, 23 out of 26 guys went to free agency. And 3 of recent memory that come to mind, who were the only kind of ones who were on big money teams, because usually the Boris thing is, he takes your small market guy and he moves him to a big market team. That's kind of the recipe success. But then you have Aaron Judge, Aaron Nola, weird, 2 Aarons, bizarre.
Yeah.
And Brandon Nimmo in the last 2 off seasons, and all of those guys went to free agency with their big market teams and signed relatively quickly without extensions, just because they knew where they wanted to go. There were moments of being afraid, especially for fans of those teams, but all those guys went back, and I think pretty fair, top of the market, but still pretty fair market value for what they do and what they got. And none of those guys, similar to Pete, ever wanted to leave. Pete talks about not wanting to go anywhere. And then the other guy who was in that lump was A-Rod. That was messier when he opted out of that first Yankee contract.
Yeah.
But you know what still happened? He came back to the Yankees.
Yeah.
It didn't matter. The Boris guys, when they do leave, it's generally small to big market. We're big market to big market. I think that there's... It's being stroked right now because Boris knows how to play the game, and he knows that Mets fans are this free resource for him to just incite public terror. And it's a terror. I don't want to lose a homegrown player. I don't want to lose Pete Alonso. I love Pete Alonso. But it's just like, I think right now it's just a lot of things being, to use the word of this episode, stroked, that really don't have to be.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think there's not a Met fan in the world that wants to lose Pete Alonso. We've seen how good he's been since 2019, since he came up. Like you said, prolific power hitter, best in baseball in terms of hitting home runs, RBIs, whatever it is. I kind of like that Aaron Nola comp, even though it's pitcher versus hitter, but I feel like that's where Pete kind of lands in terms of like the first base thing, like you mentioned, where we all know that Aaron Nola is a fantastic pitcher. We've seen him pitch. We've seen the numbers. He's great, but you know he is not Gerrit Cole. He's not Corbin Burns. He's not in that same tier, maybe even a Zach Wheeler tier now. But that's kind of where Pete lands. So I do like that you brought up the guys that are all in big markets, that they came back, because I think that will maybe give Mets fans a little bit of a breather. And at the end of the day, like you said, Pete has made it clear that he wants to stay here. I don't think that's like even just him like posturing of like, I'm going to say this because I'm on the team. I think if he was really trying to like not be back, I think it'd be a little bit more obvious than it's been shown so far. I don't think he's a genius like that. I don't think he'd be playing his cards that well. So I don't know. It's going to be super weird. I think, as we heard on the last episode, Tim Healy said, it's not happening. He's going to free agency. So hopefully the conversation just stops and we can get back to actually just playing baseball with Pete, because that's going to be the biggest thing, is how he actually plays on the field. And if he has an MVP-type season, then maybe he can get that Freddie Freeman money. If he really wants it, play good, and he has the ability to do that.
And also, I just want to go back and look at mega first base contracts also before we actually talk about what we think Pete's going to do this year, because it's really bad. And this was something that used to be super normal in baseball about 10, 15 years ago, like our teenage childhood years. Like, that was the golden age of the lunky power hitting first baseman. That was the time. Mickey, Pujols, Votto was coming up. Prince Fielder was a legend. Like, we have these guys, and I have the seven largest first baseman contracts ever listed here, besides for Freddie Freeman, Matt Olson, and Paul Goldschmidt. And it is such a who's who of awful contracts. It's not even funny. These are horrifying names to go through. Basically, every single one of these wound up being really bad for a long period of time. The biggest one ever, and this is deserved because he's an all-time great, but was Miguel Cabrera. 8 years for $248 million. Probably the best right-handed hitter we're ever going to see in our lives, I would say, I think. You don't think that's true?
Albert Pujols.
I think I might give Mickey a tiny bit more.
I'm going Pujols or A-Rod, honestly.
I guess I don't know. Whatever. But I don't know.
He's one of them for sure, though.
There was some always bad things, like the fact that, like, the things that Mickey could do, where I was just like, damn, I love watching this guy hit. Maybe it's because he wasn't lying about his age. You know what I mean? Like, maybe he was lying a little bit, actually, when he was 19, maybe he was 22. Yeah, but Pujols came up at 26 years old. So I was like, he's already in his prime. I can't give him that much credit. But Mickey signed an 8-year, $248 million when he was a little over 30 years old. First 3 years of the deal were really good. And then from age 34 on, Miguel Cabrera in total was worth -3 WAR.
Yeah.
For the next, like, 6 years of that contract.
He became old really quickly.
Yes, and that was the last $200 million contract ever given to a first baseman. And I really am not sure if that trend is going to change with Pete Alonso. Because then a little before that, you had Albert Pujols sign his 10-year, $240 million contract with the Angels. And I think that's the one that's a little scary to me, because growing up, I never could have imagined Albert Pujols playing a game outside of St. Louis. But the Angels were just stupid enough and just rich enough to make this happen the way they wanted.
But small market, big market, theoretically.
Theoretically, yeah, small market. It's almost like medium small, medium big. I think those two are most in kind of the same range, even though the Cardinals game the CBA every single year and to say that to themselves that they're a small market so they get more money and more draft picks, but that's a whole other issue for a different day. But the first year at the Angels, Pujols was worth 3 WAR. And this is F4, we're using Fangraphs for this. The highest he had in any other season was 2.7 WAR, and the 10-year contract, those were the only two seasons he was worth more than 2 WAR. Really bad. And that became like a laughably bad contract very quickly. Then you have Ryan Howard. He was worth over a 5-year, $125 million contract, 2 WAR in total over 5 years, only 112 home runs, only 111 WRC plus over a 5-year contract. When he signed it, he was the most feared power hitter in baseball. He tricked everybody in the world to think he was the best player in that Phillies team besides for Chase Utley. And he signed the contract and was worth nothing after it. And then right after that, you had Chris Davis sign the worst contract in Major League history, 7 for 161. I'm not comparing Pete to Chris Davis, but I'm just telling you guys first baseman mega contracts over the last 15 years and what they looked like at the end. And then you had Votto was so worth this money the Reds gave him. Totally. 10 years for $225 million. But the last 4 years of that were so bad. And that situation where a Reds team didn't have a lot of payroll flexibility, paying Joey Votto $22.5 million a year, hamstrung them from some good teams. The Reds from 2019 and 2021, they could have been a real powerhouse, but they were paying this guy who wasn't good $22.5 million a year. That represented like a fifth of their payroll. So kind of screwed them. Then you got a guy like Prince Fielder, who sadly his career was cut short by injury, but right after he signed his 9-year, $214 million contract, who was it, the Rangers, right?
Tigers, one of them.
Career's cut short, but oh my god, was that deal awful? Like, they got off the hook because he had to retire early. And then the last one was Teixeira, 8 for 180 with the Yankees. He retired at 36 years old, and he was this incredible athlete, cat-like fielder, good high batting averages. Quick trip down memory lane. The big first base contracts could be really, really bad, and they never, ever happen anymore because of how bad they were in the last era of baseball. So whatever Pete and Boris think they're going to get, like a 10 for 2, 250, it's almost inconceivable that he gets that contract. So I think that that should almost adhere to comfort Mets fans that I don't think anybody's going to come out of left field to blow Pete Alonso out of the water. Again, maybe it's just the Angels. Maybe the Angels are stupid to pull it off. Yeah, like if someone does it, you can almost be rest assured that they're not going to be a very good franchise. So it's like not like if like God forbid, if Pete does play another game for another team, he's not killing you forever. It's just going to be a situation where Pete's just hitting 45 home runs in a desolate franchise and winning 67 games a year, which is okay.
Just wouldn't expect any of the teams that spend a lot of money to be aggressive after a first baseman, especially when there will be Juan Soto on the market as well next offseason.
Totally. And the other caveat to that is just whether it's less years with higher AAV, whether or not someone wants to give Pete the 3 for $100, which I would give him that.
I'm totally cool with that. Like, front load the shit out of this. You want a shorter deal and more money? Deal. The thing that would ever scare you about Pete Alonso, like you said, with all these first basemen, and it's obvious with every single one. And to be fair, the guys that we mentioned with like Goldschmidt, Freeman, Olsen, we haven't seen it with Olsen yet, but with Freeman and Goldschmidt, we've seen it. But those have been a little bit more athletic first basemen than the guys we had just mentioned, which all have probably a little bit similar athleticism and stature to Pete Alonso rather than the Freddie Freeman, Paul Goldschmidt type. So as you get older, that's where it gets concerning. But if Pete wants a $30 million, if he wants to break the AAV record for first baseman, sure, short-term deal. Gotcha. Fine by me. It's just if you want to do that and also get 10 years, I don't know how that happens.
No, it's almost like if Pete wants to get the seven-year contract, he kind of has to settle in around the Olsen range. Like, it has to be maybe max $22, $23 million. And it winds up being a 7 for $155 million. So you can beat Olsen. We'll give you beating Olsen, but you're going to come in behind Freeman rather around Goldschmidt. Like, if we want to organize that, that kind of feels like to me where this probably is going in the end. Or if you want to break the record, if you want to have this plaque saying, I'm the highest paid first baseman ever, you have a 1, 2, 3, 4-year deal with multiple opt-outs where you're making something like $28, $29, $30 million, similar to the contract that Cody Bellinger just signed, Scott Boras' client earlier this week, where it's like, or I guess last week when you guys were listening to this, where it's like,
stayed in big market.
That's what I'm saying. I stayed in the big market, stayed with the team that signed him last year, but I'm making the money I wanted to make, but it's not the years I wanted to make it. So I'm going to have to give myself another chance to go out there and try and get more years, where it's just this big contract thing is over. Like, conceptually, this is just not happening anymore. If this was 10 years ago, Pete would be getting 10 for 250. Pete would be blowing it out of the water. And because we didn't really have the numbers. We weren't really aware of like value of Pete. I think that is another part that comes into this, which a lot of Mets fans are like, fuck off. He's fucking incredible. Like, I know Pete's amazing, but in terms of just like what value he's bringing the baseball team, this comes from first baseman. I think we're going to talk a lot about WAR right now. And I think this is where a stat like WAR is tremendously flawed, where it's never going to capture the true value of a player like Pete Alonso, who's going to hit 40 to 50 home runs, drive in 120 runs, and just be a complete total anchor in the middle of a lineup. Because Major League Baseball teams need power, especially relative to the Mets team context. Like, I don't know where this power is coming from, and I don't know where they're going to get it next if it's not Pete Alonso. So that's also a major point of leverage for Boras and Pete. But since 2021, Pete Alonso is worth about 10 WAR on Fangraphs and about 12 WAR on Baseball Reference. And that big difference is mostly from defensive value, because Baseball Reference uses DRS and Fangraphs started using OAA after quit UZR a few years ago. So Fangraphs says that Pete is one of the worst defensive players in baseball. Baseball Reference says he's a little bit worse than average. Truthfully, I don't really care about either of those, because he plays first base defense, which first base defense is important in general. But in terms of every single position player in a baseball field, I think it's probably basically the least important.
And he's got great scoops too. Like, at the end of the day, I think the problem with Pete defensively, because we've watched hundreds of games of him now, and like, his range, not great, but again, don't give a shit, he's playing first base. The problem is like when he makes like those boneheaded plays when he's trying to do too much, and I feel like that's what really hurts him in these like defensive stats, is there are just some plays that he makes and you're like, oh, that was one of the worst baseball plays I've ever seen at first base in my lifetime. But like, relatively speaking, you don't watch Pete Alonso at first base and you're like, oh shit, it's hit to him. Like, what are we going to do? Like, what's going on? And again, those scoops are like, I think, incredibly important. And I don't think it's something that is tracked on these defensive stats.
I think the scoops are also incredibly important for first baseman, because the first baseman's defensive value, like you said, is not going to be, I feel like, taken importantly in the team context of like how much ground you're covering at first. It's how much the other guys in the infield trust you. Where I'm not squeezing the ball tight because I think I have to make a perfect throw, because if I don't make a perfect throw, I don't trust you, the catcher. I think the infield trusts Pete. I think it's just a function of Pete diving in the hole sometimes a little too often and kicking a ball off the heel of his glove, which is just like, that's just part of Pete's game. That's okay. But so I will skew a little bit more towards like the B WAR for Pete Alonso than the F WAR, because I just don't think that he should have that much negative defensive value. But Fangraphs is a lot better at stacking multiple years of WAR with a leaderboard, better than Baseball Reference. So these stats are going to come from there. And since 2021, based on Fangraphs F WAR, he's basically a top 50 player in the league. And it's in between Max Muncy and Randy Arozarena, and just two spots ahead of Jeff McNeil, which I think is kind of funny to stack that. I think I like that he's right next to Muncy, as a lot younger. But again, this is where WAR kind of fails to capture value, because in terms of WRC plus and OPS plus, he's basically top 25-ish player in the league since 2021. And if you bring him back 2019, he's a top 20, top 17, top 16 kind of guy, because he has that major 50 home run season. So I think that that's where Pete comfortably is, one of like the 20-ish best players in the league, or 20-ish most valuable players in the league. War will never say that because he's a first baseman. But it's just like, if you look at the game-to-game production, it's clear that he is one of those guys.
Well, there's just not many ways that you can fill in 45 home runs, 120 RBIs with like a 130, 135 WRC plus every year. Like, that's just not something you can be like, oh, that's an easy fix. Here's what we do to get now that production back. And that's like what you said, where the flaw is, because offensively speaking, that's why you have him. That's why you pay him. That's why you want him. And he is absolutely elite at the plate. There's no doubt about that.
No, and those stats that Mark just said, those are actually Pete Alonso's 162 career game average. 45 homers, 120 RBIs, 95 runs scored, 136 OPS plus. I don't know anyone else in the league who could really do that. Like, Freeman and Goldschmidt are amazing, but they're just not going to get to those home runs. Like, Freddie Freeman's a freak. He's going to hit 330.
Yeah, he's disgusting. He has like a 180 WRC plus every year.
Yeah, no, it's insane. But like, the 45 home runs is like, that changes games. Like, if Pete Alonso hits a home run, like, you have a really good chance to win the game that day. Yeah. And that's just kind of how this Mets offense has been built for the last few years. So it's hard to conceive it being built without that. And those 162 game averages are also coming off a year for Pete where he was terrible. The worst
year of his career. Year.
By far. He had a bad year. 46 home runs, 20% better than league average, still in an awful year. And that was with a 217 average. He got a little fly ball happy. I think it seemed like his wrist was hurting him the whole year after that bullshit play in Atlanta. But it's just like there's so much pulling in the direction of like, this guy is worth money, but I just don't think he's worth the money that they're going to star that. And then it just depends on the game of chicken that's going to happen next offseason between Steve Cohen, Scott Boras, and the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim.
I love that. It's just like, the only team that's going to beat the Mets to get Pete Alonso, it's going to be the Angels. Because this is like, this does have Angels written all over it. They're like, oh, here's our big first baseman again. We gotta got to try him. This one more time.
This is who we could pair with Mike Trout. And now we're back where we need to be. And then the other part of that, there is like an emotional element to this shit. Like, totally. It's just like, there hasn't been a homegrown player like Pete. Like, I kind of want to say like, since David Wright. And like, David Wright is a superstar. Like, I don't know, like this podcast would love to ever have either of those guys on it. Like, it'd be nice. And I feel like, you know,
tell you, we'd get probably a bunch of views on that for sure.
Definitely a ton of views. I mean, we do episodes every week. We get like at least 2,000 views. So I think we'd probably at least be at that level if we got guys like that on. But Juan Soto is going to be free agent at the same time. Like, that is going to be the negotiation of next offseason for the Mets, for Boras. Everybody is going to be trying to get Juan Soto. And I think that's going to might work against Pete Alonso, or it could work as a benefit to the Mets. If they don't think Soto's serious, you could kind of circumvent the market. You can attack the Pete thing while everybody's still looking at Soto. Like, that could be a thing. That's kind of how the Phillies got Nola back so quickly this offseason.
Yep.
Everybody was staring at Yamamoto and they're like, just come back, just come back, just come back. Here's the money you want. Just come back, please. I don't want to deal with this. It's still November. Don't make us sweat. We know you don't want to sweat. Just please come home. And that was it. And then you can attack the rest of your offseason knowing that you have these other pieces in place that you wanted to have in place. There's another weird part about it too, is that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is a free agent next year, the year after Pete.
Okay.
And in terms of WAR, those two are remarkably similar since they
did. Are they really?
Remarkably similar.
How is that possible? Because Vlad's had some like stinky years in there for sure.
Pete, in terms of WAR, usually has stinky years just because he never does anything. But Vlad had the one elite season and a lot of like kind of half-middling stinky years. But he's coming into free agency. He's going to be like 5 years younger than Pete Alonso.
Yeah, it'll
be like 25. I'm worried about the secret Vlad extension that might happen in the next like, couple of weeks. The Blue Jays have had a lackadaisical offseason. Lackadaisical. Yeah. They missed Ohtani embarrassingly. They filled in the rest of their roster with not that much. Keiner Falefa, who else? I think Santiago Espinal is going to be trying out their opening day. Your boy.
Justin Turner.
Yeah, Justin Turner. They've been just a who's who of getting middling guys this offseason. Like, they need kind of a jolt.
Not getting any better.
They need a jolt to their fan base, and I think that Vlad's guy would be more open to an extension. I could see that happening, and whatever money that happens, if it happens, total figment of imagination, that could be an anchor in the Pete deal, similar to how the Fernando Tatis Jr. contract out of nowhere fucked the Mets in negotiation for Francisco Lindor and basically had to pay him like an extra like $50 million just because so he could make like, I think it was $100,000 more in Fernando Tatis, which is definitely not an accident. Go on Cott's contract, go on Spotrac's, look at when those deals were signed, look at the difference in money, and you tell me if they had anything to do with one another. And then there's just, again, this fear to lose a beloved homegrown player. I don't want Pete Alonso to ever play for another team.
No.
Maybe when he's 37. Then maybe I can't care less. But
he can go to the Oakland A's like Mike Piazza did.
I'm telling you, in Pete Alonso's prime, I don't want him to play anywhere else. And I really still don't think it's going to happen. But I'm not, like, I can't be 100% sure.
best way for Pete to get paid this offseason, just play well again. Have that 2019 season. Let's get a repeat. Hit 50 home runs, drive in 120, be an MVP candidate, and we don't have to worry about this. We'd be like, oh, shit, okay, pay him the money, give him the money, I don't care. At the end of the day, also, like, it's not our money. So, like, This is more of a conversation of what the Mets philosophically are probably thinking, especially because we know David Stearns, smart guy, knows how an organization should be built. It's tough sometimes to commit all that money to a first baseman, but if Mark and James are in charge with Steve Cohen's money, I'm going to sign Pete Alonso every single day.
I'd love that. I mean, there was a period of time where we were technically in charge of some of Steve Cohen's money, but
yeah, we got a little bit.
Yeah, if it was like a higher sum of it, I'd be like, yeah, Mark and James get one free agent pick a year.
Pete Alonso, Juan Soto, but then Pete Alonso.
Is that part of the two then? Like, if you had to take one, who are you taking? Because we have to say that.
Juan Soto.
Yeah, I think I would.
It's the right choice. It's the only choice. Yeah.
Make him play first base. I don't care.
Hey, would you rather get hit by a car or shot with a gun? Like, I don't know. I'd rather get hit by a car. It's a better option.
I guess it depends how big the car is. Where am I getting shot? I'd rather get shot in the leg than I'd get hit by a car at full speed. I think that's easy.
That's fair. I guess it depends what speed the car is going at.
There's a lot more variables to the gun car analogy I think we're going to have to work through.
All right, we'll get through that one. But at the end of the day, Pete Alonso's fucking good. We want him on the Mets. And we know he's going to be good. There's not really a conversation to have about the stats. The player preview episode, it's about Pete Alonso free agency. That's really what it is.
All right, but we got to end it now. End it. 25 minutes. End the episode.
Done. That's it. Bye.
Bye, guys. See you next time.